Hari Om to all of you. Okay, last week we have covered up to verse number 17 in chapter 3. And what we have seen so far in this chapter is that Karma Yoga, the purpose of Karma Yoga is to purify the mind. And if one follows the right process of Karma Yoga, you will definitely purify the mind. The question is, what happens after you purify the mind? What is the next stage? So in verse number 17 and 18, Krishna explains now, for that Karma Yogi who has purified the mind, what is the result or what is the effect of purifying the mind? Definitely the next stage is going to Jnanam, as we have discussed, Jnana Yoga, or acquiring that spiritual knowledge. And when one is on the path of spiritual knowledge, what is the state of such a person has been described in verse number 17 very beautifully, when he used the word Atma 3 times in verse 17. Atma Ratir in the first line, Atma Triptas in the second line, Atman Eva Chasamtustas. The word Atma is repeated 3 times. And this Atma here refers to the self or the Atma or the consciousness within. And what is the definition for this Atma? It is said to be Satchit Ananda. It is the very fountain of Ananda. Once one discovers this Anandam, what does Krishna say? One takes delight in this self. The contact with this Atma brings nothing but delight. And not just temporary delight, but fulfilling delight. It is called Purnatvam. There is no end to this delight. So it is an ocean of delight. And one finds that level of contentment. When one reaches this level of contentment, what is one supposed to do? Because we have been told that the purpose of doing Karma Yoga is to purify the mind, and then one gets this happiness. So what is one supposed to do now? That is explained in verse number 18 in today's verse. The purpose of all actions, all of us perform variety of actions, multiple type of actions, with only one aim in mind, and that is to find happiness. Whatever we do, whether you buy a new car, new house, get married, have children, the ultimate aim is to attain happiness. But to such a person, what does Krishna say? He says, tasya meaning for such a person who has already discovered this fountain of bliss within, na eva artha, there is no need at all. Artha means no need for what? Kritena, for action. There is actually no need for him or her to perform action, because the very reason that we perform action is to attain happiness. But this person has already attained happiness, so why should he perform action? Yet we are told that one must never stop performing action. You cannot just simply give up action. As long as you are a householder, you have duties, you have responsibilities. Even though you have reached this level of internal happiness, you cannot just give up your duties. The only condition that you can give up all your responsibilities, all your duties, is what? Is when you make a decision to leave your household, put on the orange robes, and lead a ashram life. That is the only condition when you can give up all your duties. But as long as you remain a householder, you are a jnani, you have to carry on performing all your duties. So yet Krishna says there is no interest whatsoever in what is done. That means whatever action we perform, we are not looking for happiness. So why does one perform action then? Compared to any other people or any other type of people who are performing action for happiness, why does a jnani perform happiness? What is it that motivates him to perform happiness? What is it that motivates him to perform actions? You see, we perform action for happiness, but jnani has already attained happiness. So what is it that motivates him to perform actions? To make others happy, to serve society, to serve the world. So the jnani's motivation is performing actions from happiness. You see, when happiness is your goal, then you can only attain happiness when you perform the action and get what you want. But when you find happiness from action, then by doing the duty itself, you already fulfill. You don't have to wait for the result, because you already find happiness in discharging your duty. So the difference between a jnani and an ignorant person is, an ignorant person performs action for happiness, a jnani performs action from happiness. That is the difference. He is not looking for happiness because he has already found that fountain of happiness. So Krishna says that there is no interest, meaning it does not mean that you don't sit down and do anything, but the reason for performing action is you find happiness in discharging your duties, in undertaking all your duties. And some people who are very rajasic have to keep on doing action. They cannot remain actionlessness. That is rajasic people. They feel that if they don't do action, they are losing out something. So they need to be constantly occupied. So for rajasic people, you know what is a nightmare for them? What is a nightmare for rajasic people?
Keeping still in the work.
Holidays are a nightmare, isn't it? So off days are a nightmare. You go away on holiday, what do? You have to take away all the work, your iPad, your iPhone, everything, because you need to be constantly occupied. And that is the rajasic person. And the other extreme end is a tamasic person who tries to avoid every type of action, doesn't want to perform action, because action brings him pain, action brings him sorrow, action brings him more frustration. But here a jnani knows that by performing action, I also have nothing to gain, because I am already happy. And yet, by not performing action, Krishna says, what is done and what is not done, even he does not perform action, a jnani does not feel that I have lost out anything. Right? So all my responsibilities, all my duties are taken up. I do it because I am happy discharging my duties. And even if I don't get any response, I don't get any result, it also does not bother me, because I have already found the happiness in my action. And furthermore, Krishna says here in verse number 18, he also does not depend on anybody for anything. Meaning, our action does not depend on any external factor. There is no dependence on anybody to thank you for doing the action. There is no happiness to depend on any object. If I get this object, I am happy. If I don't get this object, I am not happy. But to a jnani, he does not have any external dependence. Because why? He has discovered the internal dependence, which will never ever go away. So last week, you remember, we discussed one moves from world dependence to, before you move to self-dependence, first you depend on the world, you depend on people, you depend on objects for your happiness. From world dependence, you move to God dependence, isn't it? You depend on God, you pray to God, you seek solace in God. And then you come to self-dependence, because where is that God? Where is that Sachit Ananda? Within us. So move from world dependence to God dependence to self-dependence. That is a jnani who does not depend on anything external. And therefore, Krishna summarizes or concludes that topic of Karma Yoga in the last, in this verse number 19. In verse number 19, Krishna says, Tasmat, therefore, the word Tasmat means therefore, Asakta, remaining detached. And this word detachment keeps on, it is constantly repeated in the Gita again and again and again. It is a very key to our action. As we all have discussed, it is not the action that binds us, it is the attachment to the action that binds us. When I act with ego, I act with jealousy, I act with pride, I act with anger, that action binds me. When I act with a pure mind, that same action does not bind me. So that's why this constantly, this word asaktaha, meaning detachment, 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 is constantly repeated. So the key to our happiness, the key to our peace of mind is what? Detachment. The question is, you have to ask yourself, if that is the key, how long do I need to come to this understanding? That I need to practice this detachment in every action. And then only I can experience that peace of mind, that joy. So asaktaha, an attachment only can come, that's why they call ego. What is ego? Ahamkar. Ego is nothing but identification. Ego needs to identify with something. At one stage, I identify with this body. Once I identify with this body, then every action I do is to please this body, to please this mind. Then at the later stage, I identify with my family, I identify with my possessions, I identify with everything else. And therefore, all my actions are to please the family, to get more possessions. So, ego always comes with some form of identification. This body is mine, this money is mine, this car is mine, this family is mine. Identification creates attachment, and attachment creates our problems. So therefore, the word asakta is constantly repeated. Tasma, therefore, asakta, remain detached. And when should you remain detached? When should you remain detached? So, when should you remain detached when performing actions? Satatam, always. It is not to be practiced part-time. It is to be constantly brought into all your actions, each and every action. We talk about spiritual action, we talk about worldly action. Satatam is to be constantly brought into your actions. And therefore, Krishna says, when you have this attitude of detachment in all your actions at all the time, Karyam karma, the word karyam karma means all your duties and all your responsibilities you must not run away from. You must have that attitude, I have to do all my duties, all my action. The only criteria is to be detached. So one must not abandon or run away or avoid duties. That's why the word karyam karma is very important. It means all the responsibilities and duties that we have. And we have discussed this. All the responsibilities and duties fall under, if you recall, we have discussed the Pancha Mahayajnas. You recall? Right? That means our duties to environment, duties to animals, duties to other humans, duties to the devas, duties to our ancestors. All our duties must be taken up and fulfilled responsibly. So, satatam, perform all your karyam karma. And how should we therefore understand this? Krishna has used the word samachara. Samachara means in accordance to the advice of the scriptures. Gain the knowledge from the scriptures. Because don't simply, if you don't gain the knowledge from the scriptures, what is right action? What do you follow then? If you don't gain knowledge and follow according to scriptures, what do you follow then? What is it that guides your actions then? likes and dislikes. Raga, dvesha. What I like, I do. What causes me pleasantness, I do. What action causes me happiness, I do. What action causes me sorrow or causes me pain or agitation, I avoid. That means what? I don't do what is right and wrong, but I do what I like and dislike. So, that's why Krishna says, Samachara, follow the advice as given to the scriptures. And one should not say, but I do not know what the scriptures say. Because why? Why one can't give this kind of excuse? Because we have been gifted with the intellect to understand knowledge. So we cannot give the excuse that I do not know. I do not know this, I do not know that. Everything is there. It is for us to put the effort to understand. Samachara. So do what is expected of you. Take the guidance from the scriptures. And you should do your duty. You should therefore carry out all your activities, all your duties with the attitude of detachment. And what happens, he says, when you can cultivate that attitude of detachment in all your actions, here Krishna has given us the ultimate result of such kind of actions. To act without detachment, he says, Acharan, performing all your duty, asakto, with detachment, Purusha, humans, Apnoti, attains what? Param. A human being, by just performing all your duties with the sense of detachment, will lead you to moksha. It will lead you to your ultimate goal. But understand one thing, actions cannot directly lead you to moksha. Actions cannot directly lead you to moksha. If actions lead you directly to moksha, then we are all wasting our time studying the scriptures. Actions will lead you to jnanam. Jnanam will lead you to moksha. So the ultimate goal is you will reach moksha, provided you start by doing all your actions with that attitude of detachment. You can attain the highest possible goal of human life just by doing your action. So this is the beauty of our scriptures. It is not telling us to go and torture ourselves, to go here, run there, go to do all kinds of rituals and prayers. How can you attain moksha? Just by doing your duty with detachment. Man, a human being attains the supreme. Attains param apnoti purusha. You will attain that supreme goal of human life, which is moksha. So, here now, this is what exactly Krishna is telling to Arjuna. That your kshatriya duty is to what? Is to uphold dharma. Whether Bhishma Pita or Dronacharya, all these people want to stand on the side of adharma, that is not your concern. What is your concern is to do your duty to uphold dharma. And therefore, whatever is an obstruction to dharma, it is a duty of the kshatriya to remove that obstacle. Whether it is people whom you love, whether it is your beloved relative or beloved guru, it does not matter. Because then you cannot run away from your duty. You have to remove any obstruction to dharma. That is your duty. So therefore, what is the message here? We should never classify duty as pleasant or unpleasant. Can you say this is pleasant or unpleasant? What should you look at it as? That's a nice way of seeing it. Can you say unpleasant, divide unpleasant and pleasant duty? So what should you remove away from that? There is no such thing as pleasant or unpleasant. There is only duty. The word duty only. There should not be, you should not add unpleasant or pleasant. Duty is duty to be done. That's it. There is no more question mark or dot 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 dot. Do I do this or do I don't do this? You should know what are your duties and take up all your duties. Do not classify as pleasant or unpleasant. So here Krishna has given us the formula for karma yoga, the advantages of karma yoga, and where does it lead us to. Now, having heard all this, obviously there will be a doubt in your mind now. Even if you don't have, I'll create the doubt in your mind. And the doubt will be that I am a family person, I have so many responsibilities, I have so many duties to do, I have so many desires to fulfill. Is it possible to remain in Grihas Ashrama and attain moksha? This is most of us, the majority of us are in this situation. We are all in the family life. We have various responsibilities, duties, we have desires, aspirations. Is it possible to gain liberation or moksha from by remaining in Grihas Ashram? Or do I have to leave this Grihas Ashram and take up sannyas in a proper ashram? But notice the word Grihas also has been given the name what?
Ashram.
So how can I turn my house also into ashram? That's why Grihas has also been called a ashram also. And in fact, nowadays if you go to ashramas, they are almost like house already. You know, they have internet connection, they have air condition, they have refrigerator, washing machine. And ashrama is just like our house. All the comforts and what you call conveniences are there. So what is the difference between ashrama and a house therefore? Why do you call that ashrama? Why do you call a house a house? What's the difference? What is the difference? You call where the Swamiji stays, you call it ashrama. But what the Swamiji has in his ashram? Everything exactly your house has. And your house you call a house, you don't call it ashrama. So what's the difference?
No belongs to them in the ashram.
Right. So what is it that makes it ashrama? What's the difference? It is the attachment which makes it ashrama. If you have attachment, then even an ashrama becomes house also. If you live with detachment, the house also becomes an ashrama also. So the difference is not in the design of the building or how the building is constructed, but it is depends on the occupants with what attitude they live in that. That is what makes it an ashrama. Now, therefore, the question always will be, is it possible to remain in Grihas Ashrama and attain moksha? And therefore, in verse number 20, Krishna gives us the example of no other than Janaka. Janaka Kadaya. Not only Janaka, but many others who came before and after him. You can read the lives of Janaka, you can read the lives of the many people who were not saints, who did not live in ashramas, but they lived in their own house, or in case of Janaka, he lived in a palace. And he discharged all his duties, whatever his responsibilities. Yet, Janaka, here Krishna uses the word samsiddhim. Samsiddhim means he was also a realized soul. He was a jnani. He was equipped with the knowledge. So he had self-knowledge. He understood his real nature. Yet he did not abandon his kingdom. He carried on all his duties. And therefore the word karmanai also is used. Karmanai means he also performed all his actions. He did not run away from his duties and actions. And at the same time he was a samsiddhim. He was already a realized soul. Therefore he carried on performing all the actions. And you can read many beautiful stories about Janaka, how he went about performing his actions. One of the most famous stories you might have already heard is about a saint or sage who heard about the greatness or glory of Janaka, that he's such a great person, such a detached person, and he stays as a jnani, yet he's involved in all his duties. This sage or saint could not believe it, so he went to see Janaka and he accused him. He said, what kind of sannyasi are you? You claim that you have the knowledge, you claim that you are detached, yet you stay in all the luxury. You have the whole palace, the luxury, You have people who are honoring you, who are respecting you, bowing down to you. What kind of sannyasi are you? So Janaka said, I will tell you the formula of my how I do all my action, but on two conditions. Number one, you follow me around the whole kingdom as I continue doing my duties. You observe how I am doing my duties. From day to night you follow me. And the second condition is, I will give you a pot of oil to hold. The oil is filled right to the brim of the pot. And as you are following me, make sure you don't spill one drop of oil on the ground. If you spill, my soldiers will follow you and they will chop your head off. So you make sure you keep your eye on the pot, don't spill the oil. At the same time, observe how I am carrying out all my duties. So this sannyasi went around following Janaka from morning to night, keeping his eye on the pot, also watching Janaka doing all his duties. People came to pay respect to Janaka, people threw flowers on him, people glorified him. He carried on all his respective duties, ate the good food, everything. At the end of the day, Janaka asked him, did you notice how I went about doing all my action? The sage said, no, I did not see anything at all. Why didn't you see anything? Because all the time I was concentrating on the oil. You said one drop drops, they're going to chop my head off. So all the time I was concentrating. Janaka said, same way I also carry out all my duties. I do not know what is happening. I carry out all my duties, but where are my thoughts? On the oil. Oil is the consciousness within me. I ensure that I don't even spill one drop of that consciousness. I don't lose sight of that consciousness. And I carry on doing all my duties. And similarly, there are a lot of beautiful stories told about Janaka. Who is Janaka? Father of Sita, father-in-law of Lord Rama. So such a great soul he was. And yet, Krishna says, Janaka Kadaya, there are also many others, householders like him. You can read in the Upanishads and the Puranas, sages and saints went to these people also to receive knowledge because they were such highly realized souls. In fact, sage Vyasa's son, Sukha, was sent by his father. Sukha, when he was a jnani, he went through all the knowledge. He became very proud. So he went and told his father Vyasa that, I want to take up sannyas. Vyasa told him, don't do that. You still have a lot of desires in you. You better get married, go through the grihasth ashrama, then go to sannyas. And to teach him a lesson, Vyasa asked him to go and see Janaka. So from a householder also, Vyasa wanted his son to gain the knowledge how to live in this world while being a jnani. Now, therefore, the question is asked here, when one has attained this steadfastness of knowledge, some siddhim, and one is carrying on all the actions, what is the purpose of doing actions? What is the motivation of doing action? And here Krishna says in the third line, loka samgraham. Loka means the world. Samgraham means for the welfare of the world. A jnani carries on doing his duties, carries on doing actions for the purpose of the world, to uplift the world. Loka samgraham evapi. For that reason, sampashyan kartum arhasi. You should also take to action, Arjuna. Arjuna wanted to abandon the battlefield and take to sannyas. But what was Krishna advising him here? If you also abandon the battlefield and people look up to you, people admire you as a kshatriya, they are looking at you to follow example. If they see you running away from the battlefield, what are they going to do? They are also going to follow you. They will also leave the battlefield and run away. So you have a duty. You have to perform action to set an example to others so that you also, they will follow the right example. So loka samgraham evapi. The very purpose of performing all actions and duties is to uplift society, is to serve society. A jnani does not need to do action to purify himself because he is already pure. A jnani doesn't need to do action to gain jnanam because he has already got jnanam, but he still carries on for the welfare of the world. And now in verse number 21, 21 here, there's a very important word for us here to understand, and that word is called Shrestas. Now, when we want to gain knowledge, earlier on we said that if you want to know how to lead a dharmic life, I want to lead a righteous life, I need to gain knowledge. Where do I gain knowledge from? So we said the scriptures. And there are two types of scriptures. One type of scriptures, if I want to follow the path of dharma, I want to follow the tradition as prescribed in the scriptures, I do not want to live my life according to my whims and fancies, not according to my likes and dislikes. I want to follow the right prescribed life according to scriptures. So there are generally three guidelines. One guideline is from the Shrutis. Shrutis means the Vedas, which is the very original source of all knowledge. In the Vedas, it is contained all the duties of a brahmacharya, the duties of a grihas, duties of a vanaprash, duties of a sannyas. All the duties are very clearly laid out in the Vedas, and they come under the group of scriptures called the Shrutis. For the very reason is because they were communicated to sages by God himself, and that's why it comes from the root word shru, which means they were heard. They were divine revelations which were heard. So that's why the Vedas have no known authors. Nobody can claim authorship of the Vedas. So that is one group for us to get the knowledge from. The second group of scriptures is called Smritis. S-M-R-T-I-S, Smritis. Smritis means the scriptures which fall under the group called the Puranas. We have the 18 Puranas, Shiv Purana, Vishnu Purana, Ganesh Purana, Srimad Bhagavatam, which is a Purana. Puranas contain various stories on various deities, Shiva, Vishnu, Ganesha, Krishna, etc. So there are 18 Puranas. Each Purana has various stories on different deities. And also under Smritis, Smritis means that which is remembered. Okay, Shruti is which is heard, Smriti which is remembered and passed on. And the other group of Smritis are called the Itihasas. There are two Itihasas. One is the Ramayana and one is the Mahabharata. These fall under the group of Smritis. And the third source of knowledge, if you can't get from Vedas, from the Shrutis, if you can't get from Smritis, what is the third source of knowledge here? Krishna is pointing out that is called Shrestha Achara. Shrestha Achara means we take the example of noble people, good people who set the right examples in society. Leaders who follow a dharmic way of life. We follow their example. If we can't get the righteous way of living from scriptures, the third source of knowledge is following the righteous people who set an example in society. So this is what we call the right role models of society. Okay. Now, in the Shrutis, that is the Vedas, they teach us by injunction. They give you a clear injunction. If you want to be good, you want to lead a dharmic life, you do A, B, C, D. That is, you follow this, you lead a dharmic life. If you want to lead a demoniac life, you do this, 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 you become a demon. You lead a demoniac life. So they give you very clear injunctions. Do this is good, do that is bad. Very clear. Smritis teaches the same do's and don'ts by giving us examples of good people like Lord Rama. That's why Ramayana is called Rama Ayana. You know what Rama Ayana means? There are two words there. Ramayana contains two words. Rama Ayana. So what does it mean? Ayana means follow the path of Rama or be like Rama. Follow what Rama did. Okay? That's why it's called Rama Ayana, way of Lord Rama. So these people like Lord Rama set for us the good examples how one should live as a husband, how you should respect your wife, how you should respect your parents, how you should treat your brothers and other people in the society. So they set examples for us. We read their stories and get inspired by them. Unfortunately, some people like to follow the way of Ravana also, which is also in Ramayana. So the Shrutis also tell us the right way of living, the righteous conduct, and they also tell you about characters like Ravana. Mahabharata tells you about characters like Duryodhan, which you should not follow. Right? So that is Smritis. Now, between the Shrutis, the Smritis and the Shrestha, which one do you think is the most powerful example? Between the Shrutis, the Smritis and the Shrestha, which one do you think is the most powerful impact on society? Shrestha, right. Why Shrestha? Sorry?
That's a trend of goodness.
All three said the trend of goodness. But why is Shrestha the most important? So it is a living example, right? I do not know Rama. I do not know Krishna. I do not know Yudhishthira. But I know the people who are living, who are setting the right examples in society. That is an audio-visual impact. Whereas the scriptures are only a audio impact, right? A living person is a audio visual impact. I can see the way the person is living, the righteous thing is doing. I would like to follow his or her example. Okay. Now, since a living model has got the greatest impact in society, who is the most important living model?
Gandhi.
Gandhi. Shankaracharya, Guru. Who is the most important living model? Parents. The first is the mother. Fathers will be very happy because everything starts with the mother first, right? The mother is the first influence on the child's upbringing, isn't it? What are the values? What are the way, righteous way of living is taught by the mother. So the Shrestas here that Krishna is talking about, number one is first the mother. Then as the child grows up, he also gets contact with the father. Then comes in the father. And then after that, the guru, the teacher. And then? Wife. First comes mother, then comes father, then comes guru, then
God.
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 Deva.
I'll add in one more for you before Deva. Then, then comes the leaders of society, isn't it? Because this is where the teenagers, the youngsters get their inspiration from, right? First mother, father, teacher. When they leave school, where do they get their inspiration from? From leaders of society, isn't it? Politicians. This is generally where. That's why last time there's a saying in our scriptures, Yatha Raja, Tatha Praja. Yatha Raja, as the king, Tatha Praja will be the subjects. If the head is corrupt, so will be the subjects. They will follow that way of living. In fact, if we look at it, where do all of us get our trends in society? We are actually all followers. Who started the trend of men wearing earrings? Somebody started it, isn't it? And then what happened? Everybody followed. All the trends that you see, people follow. That means there are so many followers who are looking for something to follow. It tells you something about society. We as a society like to follow somebody. That all the fashion trends, the torn jeans, you see, where do they start from? People follow, isn't it? Wearing torn jeans. And nowadays, the latest trend I've noticed is wearing two shoes of two different colors. Yeah, it is there. So where do all these trends start? That means people are watching others, right? People are watching and people are following. So they are the role models in society. They are setting. And when good role models of society are not available, what will people follow? The bad ones. So that's why Krishna wants to emphasize a lot on this word Shrestha, that we need good role models in society. we also play. We must not think that, oh, there's nobody following me, why should I lead an exemplary life? But even one person follows your example, by setting an example, you have also guided one person to the right path also. So we all play our role in each way, in our own way. And we need good role models in society to help. That's why he says, Loka Samgrahan, for the welfare of the world. How can we uplift the world? When we ourselves lead a righteous dharmic life, we also influence other people to follow us. So that's how we uplift the world. We uplift dharma by ourselves leading a righteous example in our life. Now, therefore, he says, Shreshtas yat yat acharati. Whatever a superior person, a role model in society does, and for different age groups, there are different role models. Tat tat eva, that very thing, that very conduct, itara, others, janaha, persons will follow. What type of conduct a role model leads in society, others will follow. So role models are very, very important, right? And he says, sa yat pramanam kurute, whatever kurute, whatever this righteous person upholds, whatever morals, whatever righteous way of living that person upholds, loka means all others, anuvartate, they will follow. Society will follow. Society is very easily influenced by the habits of these role models. That is, parents, teachers, leaders in society, all these have an impact on shaping of society. And that's why, in fact, earlier in chapter 1, when Arjuna did not want to fight the war, he gave all kinds of excuses that if we kill the soldiers, the males in the society, there will be no more males left. Then what will happen to the women and the children? They would be led astray. They would not have the right guidance. That's why we can see also a lot of breakdown in society now. When the parents are not responsible for the children, we find a lot of breakup in families also, right? So there is nobody to guide these children. Don't have a father figure, don't have a mother figure to guide them. But what Arjuna failed to understand, that if you don't fight this war, also all the men are going to be killed. Then who is going to be left? Who are the people who are going to survive if the Pandavas don't fight dharma, adharma? Adharma will win, isn't it? And then what will society follow as role model? Who will be left alive? Duryodhan will be there, Karna will be there. People will, on the contrary, follow this wrong role models. So Arjuna's rationale for fighting this war itself was wrong. That we kill the people, is better for us not to fight. Let adharma take over dharma. Then what will people follow? They will follow adharma, because they will be the people who are victorious. So here Krishna is saying now, if you run away from fighting for dharma, then adharma will overtake dharma and society will end up following adharma. So Shrestha's role models are very, very important. Now, that is in verse number 21 also. Okay, now in verse number 22, Krishna also wants to give himself as an example. Leaving aside role models, we all have some kind of duty to undertake in society. But what about Krishna? When Krishna takes an incarnation, what does he have to do? Does Krishna need to follow dharma? He is already an embodiment of dharma, isn't it? Does Krishna need to do action to attain karma, to fulfill desires? No, because God does not have any desires. Does he need possessions, artha? No. So dharma he doesn't need, karma he doesn't need, artha he doesn't need. Does Krishna need to perform action to attain moksha? No. So why does he then come? Why does he incarnate himself?
He comes down because that's when dharmic way starts increasing. So he comes down to remind people of
that. To uplift dharma. That means by doing action, he uplifts society, he doesn't gain anything. Because he has already created the world. There is nothing for him to gain more by coming and doing his action. And by not doing anything also, he has also got nothing to lose because he has already set up the whole creation. He has set up the law of karma. By doing or not doing, he doesn't gain or doesn't lose. Yet Krishna says in verse 22, O Partha, there is nothing for me in these three lokas for me to do. If I do or don't do, I don't gain or I don't lose. And that's why we look at every chapter of the Gita, Krishna plays a different role in every chapter. Have you noticed that? In all the 18 chapters, one day I'd like to go through that, in every chapter, Krishna plays his role beautifully. In chapter 1, what is his role? Charioteer. What did Arjuna tell Krishna? Take my chariot in between the two armies. So what role did Krishna play perfectly? Charioteer. Who is Krishna? Lord of the world, Lord of the universe. Yet what role he came to play? You asked me to play charioteer, I play the role of charioteer perfectly. At the end of every day of the Mahabharata battle, he would wash the horses, he would feed them, he would take care of the horses, take care of the chariot. That was his role as a charioteer. So he played his role to perfection. He did not complain, I am the Lord of the world, why should I be a charioteer? Then in chapter 2, what role did he play? Guru, teacher. When Arjuna surrendered to him, he took on the role of a guru. Chapter 3. Chapter 1, charioteer. Chapter 2, guru. Chapter 3.
Lead by example.
Lead by example, Shrestha. That is what he is saying. I lead by example. That's why they say God descends so man can ascend. Avatar means descent. So man can ascend. So chapter 3, he plays the role of a perfect role model. I come, I incarnate through all the stories that we read in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Every role Krishna played to perfection. And yet, people still criticize and say, you know, people use Krishna as an example. He married 16,108 wives. Why can't I have a few more wives? We look at the wrong examples. We don't understand. What is 16,108? As it is, to have one wife is a problem. Can you imagine having 16,108 wives? Try to do Deepavali shopping for 16,000 wives. So what is this? It is very allegorical. We don't understand. Then we start criticizing. Thieves say, Krishna stole butter, so why can't I steal also? Isn't it? But what is this allegory of 16,108 women who were imprisoned by the demon and Krishna rescued them and they could not go back to their household because their house people did not want to accept them. So they came and surrendered to Krishna, and the role between Krishna and them is husband and wife. But what is the role of a husband to the wife? Protection, protector. So he was the protector of these women. Right? It is not the essence of that husband and wife relation. The husband plays the role of a protector. But people don't understand, they criticize this, that Krishna had 16,000 wives. It is not possible. You don't understand the role between husband and wife. So here Krishna also in chapter 3 is playing his role, Shrestha, as a right role model. He comes, he takes incarnation, he plays all his roles perfectly. Therefore, sorry?
Chapter 4,
we'll come to that. Every chapter, there is one role he plays, all the way till all the 18 chapters. So, na asti, he says here, na asti, there is no kartavyam, there is actually no duty, there is nothing for me to do, and at the same time, there is nothing for me to attain also. By doing action, I don't gain karma, I don't gain artha, I am not going to gain moksha. There is nothing to do. Yet he says, I take up all my duties. Trishu, lokeshu, in all these three worlds. That means in hell, on earth, or the heavens. All the 14 lokas which fall under these three worlds. So he says, I have no duty, I have nothing to gain, I have nothing to lose, yet I am forever engaged in action. That's why the very beautiful word we use for Lord in Sanskrit is called Bhagavan. Right? You all have heard the word Bhagavan. What does it really mean, Bhagavan? Bhaga, the word, there are two words here. Bhaga means sixfold wealth. That is B-H-A-G, Bhag. Bhaga means sixfold wealth. And Van means the one who possesses this sixfold wealth. And what is this sixfold? Six, huh?
Wealth.
Wealth, W-A-L-T-H. W-E-A-L-T-H. Sixfold wealth. So what is this sixfold wealth that we call Lord as Bhagavan? The first is Aishwarya. Aishwarya means power, overlordship, the controller. That's what we call Aishwarya. He has that overlordship over everything. He is the controller of everything. The second quality is called Viryam. Viryam means valor or courage. The third is Yasya or fame. The fourth is Shri or prosperity. And as he owns everything in the world, Shri, he is the most prosperous. The fifth is Jnanam. He is embodiment of all knowledge. And the final one is Vairagyam. He is independent. He is not dependent on anything. So he is totally independent. Vairagyam. Now, all this sixfold wealth, one must have in full measure. You can say, I also have prosperity. Isn't it? Aishwarya, Viryam, Yasya, Shri, Jnanam, Vairagyam, right? Six. Now, one can say, I also have power, isn't it? I have power over who? I have power over my driver. I have power over my servant. So why can't I also be called Bhagavan? I also have some prosperity. So why can't I also be called Bhagavan? So what is it when we say sixfold wealth? It means in absolute measure over everything. He has power over everybody. He has total prosperity, total knowledge. We may have knowledge, but our knowledge is only partial. So one who has all these six values in absolute measure over everything, only such a person you can call as Bhagavan. That's why we give the title as Bhagavan. So here Krishna says, he has everything in absoluteness and yet he still comes to play his roles also. Now, in verse number 23, Krishna explains, therefore, what happens when he does not play his role accordingly. What happens if he does not come and set a righteous example? Similarly, what happens when elders or role models in society don't set a right example to the younger generation? Then the younger generation also will follow the wrong examples. So here Krishna says in verse number 23, Yadi aham, if again I, na varteyam, I do not engage in what? In karmani, in all my actions. If I don't do all my actions which I am given, I take incarnation for a specific purpose. And if I don't do my actions, and that also how? You see, when we do actions and we have nothing to gain, most likely we do our actions very half-heartedly, isn't it? I have nothing to gain, so why should I put full effort? But here Krishna says, Atindrita. Atindrita means doing all actions vigilantly, tirelessly, with full dedication, with full commitment. One should not just do action half-heartedly. If I have nothing to gain, doesn't mean I do everything. I do it with commitment, tirelessly, with vigilance. And when we do for benefit of others, we must understand we must not slacken on our actions. Now, if Krishna says, I don't do my actions with full commitment, mama vartma anuvartante, other people will follow my path also. They will use me also as an example. This is what God did, this is what he came, he didn't do this, he didn't do that, so why should we also do? So he says, I come, set an example, I take up all my duties diligently, do my action to set an example. If I don't do that, people will follow my path in every way. So that's why, as I said, we have all these shrutis, the smritis, etc., to help us to lead the righteous life, take the example from the scriptures and lead the righteous life, and also follow the right role models in society. And now Krishna says, if I don't do my swadharma, if I ignore all my duties, what happens? In verse number 24, he says, ime loka, in this world, if I do not perform my actions, these worlds will perish. Now, how are we to understand this? What he means by these worlds will perish? It is not that overnight the whole world will perish if we don't follow Krishna's example. Now, what it means here is that, supposing if I don't eat healthy food every day, I am not going to fall sick immediately, isn't it? But if over the years, if I keep on eating unhealthy food, what happens? After 20 or 30 years, I see the effect, right? If I don't exercise for 1 week or 2 weeks or 6 months, I am not going to collapse. But if I don't exercise for 20 or 30 years, I will feel the effects later. Similarly, if we look at the environment, if I cut one tree, there's no effect on the ecology. But if I keep on cutting and cutting thousands and thousands of trees, eventually over a number of years, you see all kinds of ecological destruction, ecological problem. So what here we must understand, it is not that immediately everything will perish. But if more and more people take to adharma, more and more groups of people in larger numbers take to adharma, eventually the whole society also will perish. So here he says, ime loka utsi dehyu, the whole world will be ruined as more and more people take to adharma. And he says, if they do not follow karma, they do not follow the righteous action dharma and do the right example, he talks about sankarasya, confusion of castes. Now this is again a very important point for us to understand. What do we mean by confusion of castes? And again, this word caste in Hinduism has been very badly understood. Krishna will explain about caste in chapter 4, but we will just briefly try to understand what is this caste system about. If we just take a quick look at chapter 4, verse number, what is that verse on the caste system? Verse number 13. So here he says, in chapter 4, verse number 13, that this caste system is whose creation? Maya Shrishtam. He says this caste system is his creation, is God's own creation. It is not a man-made creation. But this caste system is based on what? Guna and karma. So the whole caste system is based on two factors. One is called guna and one is called karma. Guna karma vibhagasaha, the division of the fourfold caste, is based on guna, which means what? What is quality? Sattvic, rajasic, tamasic, the three gunas which are in all of us. So based on your individual gunas and the type of activities or actions that you undertake, you are thus divided into the fourfold caste system, which is what is the fourfold caste system? Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya and Sudra. So when we take up any work, when we fall under this class of people, we take up any work, according to our gunas, you will find that you look forward to going to work Monday. Otherwise, it is thank God it's Friday, isn't it? When we take up a work in accordance to our nature, we enjoy the work, right? Whatever. So whatever is your nature, you take up your work, you enjoy the work when you take it up in accordance to your own inherent nature. The gunas will create your own inherent likes and dislikes, your preferences. Or scriptures say you should follow the profession in accordance to your guna. If you cannot follow the profession in accordance to guna, then the second choice is follow action according to your family or janma. You can follow according to your janma, because there is an advantage. If the father is a musician, he can easily guide you and teach you the right way. If you are interested in music, you can take up that also. But so the scriptures say follow your profession either according to guna or according to your family tradition, but never, 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 never follow profession according to money, which means everybody wants maximum pay and less work, more pay and less work. Because when you take up profession based on money, there is never that happiness of doing that work. So now, if we look at the gunas very briefly, it is not a man-made system. That means you have freedom to move according to your gunas. As per, if you have gunas of a brahmana, that means you like to learn knowledge and deep knowledge. But if you are born in a house of a shudra, it does not mean you become a shudra. Because why? Your caste is not determined on where you are born. Your caste is determined on your gunas. So you can be a brahmana born in the house of a kshatriya. A very good example is Lord Buddha. Lord Buddha was born in a house of a kshatriya, a king. Kshatriya is a king. But he, kshatriya also means administrator. Okay? But he had a nature of brahmana. He wanted to acquire knowledge and live the life of a mendicant. So he took up that which was his nature. Now imagine if one is a vaishya, means a businessman. Okay, vaishya is a businessman. And he is forced to take up a politician and is born in a family of politicians. What do you think he will turn politics into? So you follow your nature. If you don't follow your nature, but if you are forced to take up a profession of a politician, then you turn politics into a business. Now, let us understand these qualities of gunas. Sattvic guna is supposed to be white in color. Rajasic guna is supposed to be red in color. And tamasic guna is supposed to be black in color. Okay, very good. Do you notice when you do the havan, there are three colors painted there outside the havan?
Yeah.
What colors are they?
White.
White. Why do they paint these three colors? Transcend the three gunas. That is the purpose of doing the havan. We are supposed to transcend the three gunas. As chapter 14, Krishna will explain what do you mean by transcending the gunas. Okay. Now, therefore the word here, if you notice, has come from varna, means color. You know, Bahasa Malaysia, varna means color. It's, it comes from Sanskrit word varna. Therefore the caste system has been called wrongly color-based system. That means what? I'm fairer, I'm a different caste, you're darker, you're different caste. But actually the word varna is pertaining to the three colors, the mixture of the three colors. So a brahmana has got which predominant color?
White.
What is the secondary color?
Red.
So predominant, sorry, I'll tell you, let's look at it another way. Brahmana is actually pure white. Okay, Brahmana is pure white. His nature is to acquire knowledge and teach knowledge, share knowledge. So here, there is purity. When a person has that tendency to acquire and teach knowledge, we call such a person Brahman. Okay? The gunas are there, pure gunas are there. Kshatriya is red and white. Now what does red plus white mean? Mix red and white, what do you get? Pink color. So all Kshatriyas are pink in color. So red means action. So Kshatriya means those who are involved in law and order, protection of law and order, those who are in administration, those are all called Kshatriyas. In politics, those are all called Kshatriyas. There is lot of action, a lot of work, okay? But why white? Why the purity? Do work for others, to serve. That's why Kshatriya is very important. Come into politics, come into administration, you come into law and order, you are willing to give up your life for who? For the country, isn't it? You are willing to serve for the benefit of others. So politics also, people come in is to serve the benefit of others. That is through Kshatriya. Then Vaishya is what? What color? Red and why black? Exactly. Lot of activity, but tamas is there, working for your own stomach, working for your own selfish needs. That is business people. Motivated, they do a lot of activity, do a lot of action, but they do it for themselves. Whereas Kshatriya is a lot of activity, but to serve society. Finally, Shudra is pure black. Pure black means what? Doesn't like to do work, pure black, very inactive. But yet you see this Shudra, which is the laborer class, the laborers, the drivers, the what you call the manual workers, we see them as active. But yet why do we call them pure black? They are forced to work, they are driven to work. If you leave them alone, they will prefer not to work. So they have to be inspired by Brahmana, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, they have to drive them to work. Left by themselves, they prefer not to work. So therefore you can see it is a color combination, nothing to do with the skin, but the nature of the gunas, which we call as varna or color. So here what Krishna is saying now, if I don't do my duties, if I don't take up my duty according to the role I have to play, whatever role I have to play, Krishna played his role as a Kshatriya, right? And he played his role beautifully. And what Krishna says, if I don't play my role beautifully also, I am causing this confusion of caste. So somebody from Kshatriya goes into a Vaishya family, by force he becomes a Vaishya, but it is not according to his nature, ends up playing the wrong roles. So as we said, a businessman goes into a political family, then can turn politics into business, or vice versa, or whatever. A Shudra, example, who doesn't like to do work, but born in a Brahmana family, but he is forced to become a Brahmana, but he is very lazy by nature. How will he play his role? So there will be confusion of caste. People will not know what role and how to play it accordingly. So here we must understand clearly the caste system is based on guna and karma and not be confused by it. Okay? We'll stop here. Are there any questions?
Okay, in a person's lifespan, you can actually move from the guna, right?
Correct. Yeah. Yes.